Hello and welcome. This is Sharon bringing you the Pantograph for today, Wednesday, March 5th, 2025. We will begin our reading on the front page of the paper, as we generally do, with the Eats of the Week column. Bright future for times past. Owners bringing modern touch to longtime restaurant. Matt and Shelley Streens have owned and operated Oh Baby Salon and Spa for over 22 years in Bloomington. And last year, they took on another venture as the new owners of Times Past Inn at 1216 Towanda Avenue in Bloomington. Art and Judy Donaldson first opened the restaurant in 1983 and ran it for about 37 years. Jeff Patterson then ran it for 2 years until the Streenses took over. Matt Streens also used to own a cleaning and remodeling company, as well as a CrossFit gym called the Body Compound, for 5 years. The Streenses decided, after becoming empty nesters, that they wanted to dive further into entrepreneurship, and they officially became restaurant owners on June 17, 2024. We would have never done something like this without the clientele, the loyal fans. This place has a very good following, people that have been coming for years, and so it wasn't starting from scratch, Matt Streens said. It's not just the clients either. It's the staff that we've got. A couple of them have been here for over 25 years, and they have their own little followings as well. Times Past Inn, or TPI, is known for its customer service, as well as its breakfasts, portion sizes, and reasonably priced and delicious comfort hearty food, he added. Some customers dine in 7 days a week, even multiple times a day, he said. At first, some of their loyal fans were concerned about new owners coming in and making changes, Shelley Streens said. But those customers still come to the restaurant with the new changes, which have included adding a POS, point of sale system, expanding hours, adding food items and daily specials, online ordering, video gaming, and giving the restaurant an overall facelift. It's definitely brighter, so much brighter in here. And definitely, when I was designing it, I just wanted a very modern, very clean look, Shelley Streens said. Matt Streens said business has boomed since adding online ordering through their website and through DoorDash. He said 10% to 14% of their monthly business is now online ordering, whereas before that was an option, they would only occasionally receive orders over the phone. Eggs and coffee are the top sellers for the restaurant. Other popular menu items include the biscuits and sausage gravy and the classic breakfast, or number two on the menu, which includes two eggs, choice of potatoes, hash browns or American fries, choice of toast, white or wheat, and choice of meat, sausage or bacon. Breakfast is available until 2 p.m. each day. Daily specials include $7.50 burger baskets and half-price bottles of wine from 4 to 8 p.m. on Wednesdays, and $4 premium drinks and half-price appetizers from 4 to 8 p.m. on Thursdays. They also have blue plate specials each day, including fried chicken, horseshoes or ponies, country fried steak, meatloaf, and a barbecue pulled pork sandwich. Mimosa flights are available on weekends, with customers offered their choice of three flavors, including orange, peach, pineapple, pomegranate, cherry, and raspberry. The Streenses also plan to offer seltzer buckets in the future. We're adding some items here very soon. We're excited for our daily specials, changing up our dinner menu a little bit, Matt Streens said. This place has always been known as a breakfast place, pretty much. And since we took over, our lunch business has grown quite a bit, but our dinners are softer. You know, we've not been open for years for dinner. I think pre-COVID was the last time they were serving any dinner, and we brought back dinners in October. On Friday nights, the bar, which they referred to as the lounge, is full of people, and they have a nice crowd, he added. The Strainses said they believe customers appreciate them being very involved as owners and having a family-owned establishment, especially as an independent breakfast joint, which Matt Strain said seemed to do well in Bloomington Normal. Shelley Strain said they also have received compliments on their work ethic from customers who notice they are often working both the front and back of house. The customers really like the new vibes of the place, which goes into the whole night thing, because we want people to think of times passed in, to stop in, get a beverage before you go home, Shelley Strain said. Meet up with your friends, grab a bite to eat, or get a to-go order. That's what we'd really like to see those nights look like. While the Strainses have completely renovated the inside of the diner, they soon plan to tackle the outside to give it a more modern look as well. They said their goal is to make dinners great again. And if you want to go again, this is the Times Past Inn at 1216 Towanda Avenue in Bloomington. Their hours are 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday through Saturday and 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. on Sunday. You can reach them by telephone at 309-828-8312 or visit their website, timespastin.biz. Today's flick fact question. Traffic accidents obviously occur at all hours in a day and a week, but can you name the time in a week that's most dangerous traffic accident-wise to be driving on Illinois roads? Is it Friday between 3 and 7, Monday between 6 a.m. and 10 a.m., or Saturdays between 4 and 8 p.m.? And the answer, according to the Illinois Department of Transportation statistics, is Fridays between 3 and 7 p.m. IDOT says 16% of all traffic accidents in an entire week occur in that four-hour stretch. And from the past pages of the Pantograph, how time flies locally. 100 years ago on March 5th, 1925. With well number 2 out of commission, Normal is depending upon a single well for her water supply. The shaft on number 2 broke on Sunday, March 1st, and was necessary to turn to number 3 for the water supply. It has been arranged so that in case of a complete breakdown at the Normal Water Works, the supply can be drawn from the Bloomington water mains. 75 years ago, March 5th, 1950. 7 Bloomington cab drivers giving blood at St. Joseph's Hospital on Saturday, March 4th for Barbara Lynn Oliver, 2½ of Eureka. The child has a rare blood disease. An appeal for donors was printed in the Pantograph. 50 years ago on March 5th, 1975. Some were convinced, some were confused, some were amused, but all of the 500 who heard Josh McDowell's Middle East Apocalypse in the Illinois State University Union Auditorium on Tuesday evening, March 4th, seemed impressed with the Christian activist's dramatic argument. While warning he was not predicting the world's end, the 34-year-old theologian coupled scientific facts and biblical prophecy to forecast a nuclear war in the Middle East. "We are on the brink of a 7-year countdown," he said. "At the end of the 7-year period, 1/2 of the world's population will be dead." And 25 years ago, March 5th, 2,000. About 700 tenured and tenure-track faculty members at Illinois State University will vote Wednesday, March 8th, on whether to form a union under the ISU Faculty Association. Although the Faculty Association has campaigned on a 10-plank platform, the two main issues are protecting the faculty role in ISU government and seeking salary parity with peer institutions. Normal OK's $211 million budget takes on Illinois Art Station ownership. Normal adopted a fiscal 2026 budget that cuts spending by more than 5% from this year, citing a conservative financial approach in the face of declining revenue. After a public hearing Monday, the town council approved a $211 million budget for the fiscal year that starts April 1st. This reflects a 5.38% decrease from the current year's estimated $223 million budget. In another matter, the council accepted the donation of the land, building, and other assets of the Illinois Art Station. In the next fiscal year, the town is expecting less income from sales tax, which accounts for about 40% of the town's general fund revenue. It therefore is planning reductions in several areas, including transfers from the general fund, which covers most operating expenses, capital projects, savings for contingencies, economic development plans, and extra pension funding. The final version of the budget that was initially presented in January has reduced the town's projected revenue by $477,500 and increased expenditures by $151,200. During the public hearing, the Reverend Kent King Nobles, pastor of the First United Methodist Church, pointed to the lack of funding toward establishing a sustainability office, which was highlighted as a priority in the town's 2050 sustainability plan. In September, the town adopted a plan calling for improvements in housing, transportation, and quality of life in response to climate change and other factors. "I understand there are complexities," King Nobles said. "I guess to me, what this means is that all of us, you as a council, our town staff, and all of us as citizens, are going to need to work a little bit harder this year to make sure that sustainability is prioritized and that we're moving ahead in these areas. I know staff has already started some new initiatives, and I'm grateful for that. I appreciate that time and energy," King Nobles added. City Manager Pam Reese said she wished the town could present a budget that would include staffing goals for the sustainability coordinator and introduction of the sustainability office. But as of right now, it is not the right time for those staffing changes. Reese added the implementation of the 2050 sustainability plan, as well as other master or comprehensive plans, will continue to be monitored. "I think everyone could find something that they wish was different in this budget and that they wish we could do more of or less of. But in the grand scheme of this entire operations budget and capital investment budget, I think this is something that council can be very confident in and very proud of," Reese said. Sales tax estimates call for $15.33 million from the state and $22.31 million from the local. for a total of $37.64 million in the coming budget, which is down from about $40 million in the current fiscal 2025 budget. The total revenue expected for the general fund in fiscal year 26 is about $96.7 million. The fund for building the Uptown Pedestrian Underpass is expected to be $19.32 million, while the water and sewer funds are expected to be $17.36 million and $9.5 million, respectively. The town expects to spend $9.44 million on police and fire pension funds, which are on track to be paid in full by 2040, and should thus allow lower annual payments going forward. Other expenses include $8.9 million on roads and $6.33 million on debt payments in the next fiscal year, according to the town documents. The Illinois Art Station Board and Foundation approached the town about the donation as part of plans for a future that would increase the organization's reach and further its mission, town documents said. Assets to be transferred include the property at 101 East Vernon Avenue, including furnishings, equipment, and the parking lot. The organization and its intellectual property, including lesson plans and programming materials, also will be included. This is yet another milestone that will empower Illinois Art Station to continue to create and grow alongside its young artists for many years to come, said Executive Director Hannah Johnson. Thank you for affirming with your vote that art is normal. The approved transfer creates a town-owned public art education facility while maintaining the Illinois Art Station name, according to town documents. Illinois Art Station is a nonprofit organization dedicated to providing education and experiences in the visual arts to Normal residents and visitors. It was founded in 2016 by Laura Burke, psychology professor emerita, as an outreach program within the College of Arts and Sciences at Illinois State University. I think it's important to add how this all started, and so I'd like to recognize Laura Burke for her vision and generosity in the process of moving this along, and the board members who've worked so hard to make an incredible community asset and benefit to the arts community, and those underserved who don't have the opportunity that some other people do, said Normal Mayor Chris Coos. Thank you for what you've done and your incredible generosity and your mission for Illinois Art Station. Under the donation plan, the town agrees to maintain art education programming for a period of 20 years. That includes providing visual art education to children and families with deliberate efforts to reach underserved populations for around 75% of the programming time. The facility and grounds may be used for other community purposes for the remaining programming time. Additionally, the town agrees to retain the property and use it for community purposes for 70 years. The staff anticipates a net annual expense of approximately $175,000. Assistant City Manager Jenny Kiger said Illinois Art Station does bring in some revenue with its programming and events and historically has had success in securing grant funding. She added that the town will continue to seek out additional grant opportunities to offset expenses. Town staff will work with the Illinois Art Station Board and Foundation to begin the transition process, targeting April 1st as the closing date for the real estate transfer. Public comments. During the public comment period of the council meeting, resident Nate Anderson shared details of an incident he had last month involving three normal police officers who he said confronted him in response to a report of a mental health crisis on February 21st. Anderson told the council the officers confronted him aggressively. In their response, and emergency medical technicians pressured him to go to the hospital, citing a town policy. Normal Police Chief Steve Petrilli said Tuesday, upon reviewing the report and the body-worn camera footage, the responding officers handled the call for service as trained. I understand that these instances can sometimes be confusing for the people involved. However, we responded to a call for service, and the officers handled that call for service as trained, Petrilli said. It can be confusing, and in those instances, we encourage people to ask questions and to get answers to those questions. Petrilli said the department has a protocol in place for cases in which people believe an incident was mishandled and they can file a complaint and ask to speak with a supervisor. The police chief said there is no record of Anderson filing a complaint or reaching out to the department. In other business at Monday's meeting, the council awarded a $738,237 contract to J.G. Stewart Contractors Incorporated for sidewalk improvements, including accessibility ramps. They also authorized a $1,460,711 contract with Hoar Construction Incorporated for sanitary sewer lining work. They accepted a $465,240 bid for water main and service line materials to Ferguson Waterworks of DeKalb. And they authorized the town to solicit bids and sign a contract for the supply of electricity for the town's electric aggregation program for residential and small commercial retail customers. Pontiac raises sewer fees 32%. Basic sewer use charges in Pontiac will increase by 32% by 2026 to help pay for a $42 million upgrade to the city's wastewater treatment plant. The City Council approved without opposition a two-step increase plan on Monday that City Administrator Jim Woolford said will be used to cover operations and debt service on Illinois Environmental Protection Agency loans. Customers whose water consumption does not exceed 200 cubic feet per month now pay $12.38 a month. That will increase on April 1st to $14.24, and then on April 1st, 2026, to $16.38 per month. Customers using more than 200 cubic feet a month pay $6.19 per 100 cubic feet, and they will see increases to $7.12 per 100 cubic feet, and then to $8.19 per 100 cubic feet on those same dates. Billing revenues for the sewer department are expected to be at about $3.7 million for fiscal year 2025, which ends in March. However, the city projects about $4.2 million in billing revenues for fiscal 2026. The IEPA loan requires the city to pay about $2.3 million annually over the next couple of years. After that, once some of the smaller IEPA loans have been paid off, payments will drop about $200,000 a month, according to Woolford. As we move into next year, we'll be able to look another year out and see how we're doing, where we need to go from there, Woolford said. Jake Schopp, assistant sewer superintendent for Pontiac, said upgrades began around 2020 and were finished by the end of 2022. Before that, the last major upgrade to the treatment plant was in 1986. Schopp said the plant's equipment was made out of steel and experienced significant rot and deterioration. But the new plant's equipment is composed entirely of fiberglass and stainless steel. Although major equipment failures were occurring on a regular basis, the upgrades were also needed to comply with IEPA's requirements to treat for nitrates and phosphorus. This was coming down the pipeline no matter what, just because of what the IEPA requirements are now, Schopp said. Schopp said the project also served as an opportunity to perform a couple million dollars worth of storm sewer separations. Teen accepts plea deal in homicide. An 18-year-old accused of fatally stabbing another teen has accepted a plea agreement. Luis A. Monroy of Bloomington is charged with four counts of first-degree murder in the stabbing death of 19-year-old Nicholas M. Zapata of Normal. Monroy was 16 at the time of the offense, but because of the seriousness of the charges, the case is being heard in adult court. The defendant appeared in court Tuesday before Judge Jason Chambers, during which attorneys said they had reached a partially negotiated plea agreement. Monroy had previously pleaded not guilty to all charges. He is scheduled for a plea hearing April 30th and a sentencing hearing on June 27th. These charges stem from a birthday party that was held on September 23, 2023, in the 300 block of Kenmore Road in Bloomington. Prosecutors have said Monroy and Zapata argued at the party, and the younger boy became enraged and stabbed the other. According to the probable cause statement, multiple witnesses saw Zapata attempt to run away from Monroy, who chased and tackled him, pinning Zapata to the ground. Monroy then stabbed him four times in the chest, prosecutors said. Witnesses told police that Monroy had told them not to call 911 before running away, according to the probable cause statement given at Monroy's initial appearance. Bloomington police responded to the scene shortly after 10 p.m., where they found Zapata with multiple stab wounds and laying next to him a pocket knife that appeared to have mud on the blade and blood on the handle, according to the probable cause statement. Zapata was taken to Carl Broman Medical Center, where he was pronounced dead. Assistant State's Attorney Emily Young appeared Tuesday on behalf of the state, while attorney Kevin Sanborn of the Johnson Law Group represented Monroy. We'll take a short break and then return with the second half of the Pantograph for Wednesday, March 5th, 2025. Please stay tuned.